This is November the 10th, 1989. This is Earl Mann recording for the Dearborn County Oral History Project. Talking to George Taylor in Guilford, Indiana, born and raised in Dearborn County. George has been kind enough to let me come into his home here and talk to him about the time of his life in Guilford. I'd like for you, George, just kind of introduce yourself a little bit, if you would, please.
I'm George Taylor. I was born up West Fork here, a couple of miles from Guilford. Folks moved to Guilford when I was about 12 years old from the farm up there. And they lived here until their death around 1945-50. I was gone from here from about 22 to 45, so some of that is pretty much blank. As a kid, I attended Greenbrier School, one-room school. I think there's a lady that was my teacher in about the fourth grade that's still living, I think over in Kentucky, Frieda Baker. She's a sister of Doc Baker in Aurora. I think that's the only one of my grade school and possibly high school teachers that are still living. World War One was, we were still living on the farm yet then, and Brother Frank was in World War One. And he was stationed down in Texas, so he sent me a horned frog. I had the horned frog for a month or so. And one day I left the screen over the top of the box for a couple of minutes to do something else, and I never found my horned frog. As a kid, he used to do quite a bit of hunting. I'm a cousin, Harry Phillips. We hunted groundhogs in the summer and rabbits in the winter. And that kept us out of mischief part of the time. Then when we moved to Guilford, hunting sort of went by the wayside then because I had too many other things to do. I didn't have to fight my way into the school because I knew some of the students before I came. Otherwise, I'd probably had to establish myself in the school. That seemed to be the character of things in those days. When I graduated from the eighth grade, we took a county examination, and I went to the big town of New Elsis to take the examination. For some reason or other, I passed. Then time to go to high school, and there wasn't any high school in Guilford. I think they started one that year, one room school up here. It was the first year of high school. And the deal was that they'd have 2 years high school here at Guilford, and then you'd have to find some other place for high school. And Brother Frank and his family was living up at West Lafayette, so I went up there and went to high school there at West Lafayette. And graduated in 1926. About 25, Frank and his family moved back down here to Guilford, so I stayed and rented the house out and fired the furnace and lived in one room of the house and signed my own report card.
When you went to Greenbrier, George, did you walk? How far was that?
Well, yes, we walked. I think I had about the farthest walk. I went up over the hill there to Uncle Harry's, which is right at the top of Greenbrier Hill, where Irvin Warren lives now. And then the school was up there in the corner of Lou Ellinghausen, what was Lou Ellinghausen's land there, about across the road from where Steve True lived, printing there across the road, a little bit this side, but I can't think, I don't know who's living in that house. It's a double frame house there, farmhouse, barn.
Was that a one-room school?
Yeah, one-room school. We had all 8 grades. About 2 children to a grade. I and Etta Ellinghausen Kraft was 1 grade. And Carl Brandt and Helen Collier was a grade behind us. And then I think the kids run out then. I don't remember any grade behind that. They had school there 1 year after I left, and then they found out they couldn't get along with it, so they closed it up. And then when I come to Guilford there, they had school a couple of years after I got out of there, and then they closed that one up. So I decided they couldn't get along with being as I was gone without any use of having school there anymore.
What was Guilford like that this period of time when you lived here before you moved away? What kind of businesses or industry did they have here?
Well, Lou William had a blacksmith shop up there. That's where the horses got shod. And there were 3 grocery stores in town, plus a hardware store and filling gas pumps. Had scales. I had a depot where there were 4 trains stopped today, 2 going west and 2 going east. And if you wanted to go to Lawrenceburg by train, you got on the train and rode down to Lawrenceburg Junction, then cut the Jerkwater over in town, and you cut the Jerkwater back to Lawrenceburg Junction and picked the train up from Cincinnati and come back out to Guilford again. It could be done because there was a train that went down, went east about 9:30 or 10 in the morning, and one going west about 4:30 in the afternoon.
Was that Jerkwater an interurban from the station downtown?
No, it was a steam deal that run on the railroad that the Big Four, Conrail or whatever runs there now, to that services Sigrum's and the mill down, not the mill, but the warehouse. What is it they call that?
Not you're thinking Pearson Hollowell or veneer plant?
No, I was thinking the one over there west of the courthouse there, green place there.
Okay, the granary, right?
Yeah, where the silos are, and they load cars out there from that deal in there. That's the same railroad track. Depot was there at the end of Walnut Street. So you got off the train there at the end of Walnut.
Were automobiles very prominent around that time in this area?
No, not particular. There were some. Dad got a Model T Ford, I think it was 1915. And it was one of the first out around. Well, there was fellow had the tin shop and so forth. Chris Vogel had a tin shop there in Guilford, and he had an automobile before that. But after we got up around 1920, why, automobiles began to get more plentiful in there. And, I'm trying to think of the man's name, had a Maxwell dealership up at the depot there. And he sold several of the Maxwells around through the country. Weddle, Jim Weddle.
How about electricity here in Guilford? Did you have electricity then?
Well, electricity come in about, 25, I think. And Brother Lester had a store up there, and for lights, they had a carbide deal for a while, and that gave us a source of carbide for 4th of July shooting. We'd take a can with a pressed-on lid and poke a hole in the back of it, put a little carbide in there and spit in it, press the lid on and set her down, put your foot on it, touch a match to it, and get a pretty good boom out of it. We'd see how which one could blow the can lid the furthest. Then they got a generator set there that was run by a motor. And when the motor died, the lights went out. So the motor needed servicing every day so that you'd have lights that evening. Then about 25, the public service said that for, I think it was $200, they would run electric line out to Guilford. Well, the store was interested in that, getting away from that motor and so forth. So they was interested in getting the electric line out. And they tried to get somebody else to go in to chip in on the $200. But, you know, there wasn't anybody out here that needed electric. They had their McCoy oil lamps, and that made the lights. Of course, in those days, lights was about all electric took care of. You didn't have the refrigerators and the radios and TVs and all that stuff. So the main point in having electricity was for light. And people had their kerosene lamps or rail lamps and so forth, and some of them gasoline. They didn't need electricity.
How about telephones?
Well, telephones, the telephone was out here in this section. They had a exchange here at Guilford. And they had, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 lines or something that come into this exchange, like the one on Greenbrier and one up to Bonnell, another New Yorkville, and one up East Fork or Sodden Ridge and Mount Pleasant Ridge. It had different lines, and the patrons of the people that had telephones, they kept up the line. And about every year they had a work day when the men got out and cleaned the brush off the line, around the line, and put in new poles if they needed it and so forth. And they had a lady here at Guilford that operated the exchange in her house, and I don't know what she got for operating the exchange, probably about $5 a month, something like that. That was paid by the patrons of the telephone that had telephones.
most of the people in Guilford and right close to it, George, their nationality, they were associated with what country?
Well, Guilford and the vicinity around it was settled by the English starting in about 1818. There was a John Smith and a, I forget what the Eubank guy was, but they came over from England and come up Tanner's Creek here and settled here. The Eubank homestead still up about a mile here up number one from Guilford, and it's been the Eubank family, I guess, ever since it was built. They, north of here, it come, the reason they settled in the valley here was that was the water supply, and also that was the road. This was forest land, and rather than chop trees and make a road, when the creek was down, they had an open road. And a lot of the travel was by horseback, so they didn't care how many ruts was in the road. The horse took care of the bumps.
This is kind of a hilly area. What kind of farming did the people do to make a living? What did they raise?
Well, they cleared the land off here, and corn and wheat and hay, and some oats. I don't know whether there was much rye. Then a little later on, tobacco come into this area, and there was quite a bit of tobacco raised in around this area here. But
how about livestock?
Well, livestock. Every farm had cattle, had milking cattle, and some of them was in the beef cattle. Some of the farmers raised sheep. There were some goats around the country, and horses. All the farm work was done by horsepower. Most of the farmers had, if they had very much of a farm, they had a half a dozen or more horses so that they could kind of trade off on their teams and not work them too hard every day.
Did the Depression seem to affect life in Guilford very much?
I don't think it affected too much here in Guilford. Of course, the money was scarce. They didn't have a whole lot of money. But, and most of the people here banked in Lawrenceburg. Might have been some of them banking in Sunman. But I don't know of any financial institution that went broke during the Depression. That was what ruined a lot of people. They lost their life savings in a bank or in stock or something. I don't think many people in Guilford paid much attention to the stock market.
Of course, the Ohio River was a few miles down the road from here, but it does affect Guilford when it gets very high. Can you remember any of those experiences with water in Guilford?
Well, I was over in the western part of the state working over South Terre Haute there when the flood, 36 flood hit, 37 flood, wasn't it? 37 flood hit, and I was on pretty high ground over there, and flood didn't bother too much there, but they never got any. We had refuge, what do you want to say?
Refugees?
Yeah, refugees. You can say it. I have trouble. Come up from down in Evansville, down in that area, and Evansville was 100 miles or more south of where I was stationed over there.
Did that flood things here in Guilford at that time?
Yeah, the lower end of Guilford was practically all underwater. It come clear up to what's now the post office there. I understand they tied their boats to a telephone pole or light pole across the street from the present post office. And everything in the lower end of town was flooded. The house here that I live in was, it was 3 foot of water on the floor. And I wrote Dad when were the folks, about the time the water was highest, asked him what he'd take for his cottage on the Ohio River. He didn't think that was very funny.
What about Prohibition? I know that with the influence, you have the English, the German, a lot of them are well noted for making their own. Did Prohibition affect this area very much?
I don't know. I was raised an English Protestant, and we didn't worry too much about drinks. But they were around, wherever, if you wanted them, you could find them. There were speakeasies and joints here and there that, and some of them were, there was quite a few stills around the country. They kept them hid out and they got raided and started out again someplace else. A lot of the German folks had their wine, and they enjoyed it. Guilford didn't have any saloon or anything, so I don't remember of anyone getting intoxicated. Some of them probably did, but I don't remember of any of them.
How about organizations, farm organizations or veterans organizations? Were they very prominent that you can recall here?
Some of them farmers around the country. Some of them were Farm Bureau, members of the Farm Bureau organization. And there was a Odd Fellows Lodge here in Guilford that prospered pretty good for several years. Other than that, I don't know if there was much organizations around. Not to my knowledge, anyhow.
How about the government programs in the 1930s, after President Roosevelt started instituting some of those? Were there any of those programs that around the Guilford area that people could get into for work?
I don't know. I was away from here around that time. I don't know what programs they had in here. Of course, they had the Civilian Conservation Corps that had camps around over the United States where they done work of different kinds. They had both the camps for boys or young men, and then they had camps for veterans. Now they had a veterans camp over here at Versailles, and I don't know of any young men's camp in this area at all. They had them over in state parks, a lot of them Spring Mill, Turkey Run, Shackamack. They also had camps, erosion deal, men that worked out on the farms on erosion control.
How about politics in this area? Most of the people, are they Democratic, Republican, switching?
Well, that depends on who you talk to. York Township, which I've voted in ever since I started voting, was predominantly Democratic. We have had some Republican trustees and so forth, but York Township, and on north of here, townships were predominantly Democratic. Well, you got Miller Township, I think it was running about half and half or something sort there. And you get over in the southern part of Dearborn County, I think it was most of the predominantly Republican. Along about the early 20s, there was a Klan movement in Indiana that was pretty strong. And here, Guilford Dulce was into it also. There was a funeral here in 1926 that was, I guess you'd classify as a Klan funeral. There were a lot of people in robes and sheets and pillowcases, and a lot of pictures taken. That I've seen pictures of it, though I wasn't here at that time. I think the Klan began to fade not too long after that. About that time, I think it was Stevenson, a fellow named Stevenson, got up pretty high in the state politics, got in trouble. That kind of put a crimp on the Klan deal. We lived up on the farm there when I was a kid. William Hornback had a grocery store up at Yorkville, and he had a route. More than one, I think, but he'd come there home every Tuesday, I think it was. First he had a team of mules and a wagon, and then he got a truck. And he carried grocery staples and bought eggs and chickens and whenever I was home, I always tried to talk Mom into getting me a stick of that hard bologna. It was about a foot, 15 inches long, and about 2.5 inches in diameter, and made a good billy club. And I enjoyed that thoroughly, but the folks didn't think too much of it. So I had trouble getting that accomplished to get them to about every year, maybe I'd get me a stick of bologna. The stores here in Guilford, they didn't have any wagons running out. So Sam Houston had the store there where the Guilford Post Office is now. And Aaron's had a store across the street, which is a vacant lot now, and next door, O.W. Vaughn had his grocery store. So if you had any money and come to Guilford, well, there wasn't any point in starving to death. I don't know just what else that One time here, I guess it was in the 40s, a fellow came here. He was in Indiana, going to University, Bloomington, Indiana University, and he was from England, and he'd got acquainted, I think, with a lady out at Batesville. I think her son was going to school over there also. Anyhow, he was out visiting the lady at Batesville, and they said something about Guilford. So he wanted to come to Guilford, so he came down and took some pictures, and I talked to him there a while. And it seems that his home in England was Guilford, but they spelled it G-U-I-L-D-F-O-R-D. And some 6 months later, he got back to England, and he'd written an article for a newspaper over there, and he sent me a copy of it.